You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, ESW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome into the KMOX Garden Hotline. I'm Stuart McMillan, a pawn in the game. Jeff Kendall is here from Horseman Brothers. And we also have Glenn Kramer from Robinson Seed Company as well. We're taking your phone calls, 314-436-7900. Again, 314-436-7900, the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Stuart.
Well, how's it going? I mean, a little cold this morning, but...
I was telling Glenn there was a little frost on the fescue out in West sure County was. This morning. So,
wow, that sounds like a new are you writing that poem later today? Frost on the fescue.
Well, we don't have any pumpkins now, so lots of fescue. So.
Yeah, we were commenting that we think that everything's about 2 to maybe 3 weeks behind compared to last year. There's a whole lot more work done and a whole lot more growth on plants this time last year compared to this year. And
just because of the cold?
Yeah, cold and the rain.
And
rain will slow things down. The nighttime cold temperatures really slow down a lot of things. So
I thought the rain kind of helped seed. I thought that was kind of...
An inch or two, but not 5 or 6 inches.
Okay. Pushes
that's not normal.
I got you.
Right. Yeah, that can be more detrimental than help in some ways.
Well, we already have a phone call. Let's go right to the phones. We're going to Don. Good morning, Don. You're on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Are you there, Don?
I'm doing okay. How are you today?
Oh, hey, we're Don. Just great. What do you got?
Hey, I have some hostas that I moved from another house about 4 years ago. And two questions. One, can I split them so I can spread them out? And two, when can I do it?
Hey, Don, you know, you could move those really, I mean, even in the middle of the season, you can. But the premier time to divide and move hostas is in the early fall. You know, if you can really do that, they just seem to work. It works really, really well. But believe me, as long as they're really in, you know, well established and you dig them up and like anything and get most root ball intact and, you know, you can divide it and replant them and adequate water, they should be fine. Yeah. Usually are.
Mm. Hopefully they're the deer-resistant hostas, right, Jeff? Everybody wants those.
I've only had one deer in the backyard, so I'm okay with that.
Well,
if I wait in the fall, should I wait for the leaves to die down or just pick like September, October to do it?
Actually, you hit it. Like September is good, you know, so you're still planting on warm soil and they have time to root in and get like reestablished before they go totally dormant.
and do it at a time when it's not blazing hot and dry.
Right. And like I said, early spring, the problem right now is, you know, obviously the leaves aren't even expanded. It's hard to really get that whole plant and know where to cut it and everything else. So I'd even say you're, even if you did it a month from now, it's maybe better than trying to do it right now, you know, as they're just coming up, you know.
Yeah, they're about 4 inches tall right now. Mm-hmm. So I thought, yeah, they're trying to reach for the sun and grow. So I'll leave them alone, and September sounds like a good time.
That'd be best. Thanks.
Good.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Another phone call. Kevin is on the line. You're on the KMOX Garden Hotline.
Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Morning, Kevin.
How are you?
Great. What do you have for us today?
I have one question. How can you control these animals to stay off your fruit tree?
Don't plant fruit trees. Right? that's kind of basic, but no. There's sprays, Kevin. Deer repellents, I guess you might be talking about that. But if it's squirrels or something like that, you got to darn near build a cage around them. It's supply and demand. They got to have an alternative food source to really be effective. If you have ideal fruit trees and they're in a protected area, all you can do is try the sprays that repel them with either a taste or a smell, or put a physical barrier up like some fencing. That's what I think, Jeff. I don't know if you have a different opinion.
Yeah, no, mechanical or chemical, you know.
That's about it.
Yeah, it's tough when there aren't any other fruit trees around it. Is that kind of, I guess if you only have one, they're going for it, right? That's kind of the idea.
Well, it's a lot of population, too. You know, you got like town and country, I think, where you live. Well, there's more deer there per square mile.
Yeah, and I don't know what Kevin.
Nature allows.
I don't know what Kevin's really has, you know, but let's say it was a cherry tree and he's worried about the cherries on the, you know, you can't put netting over it, you know, to keep birds and animals off of it, you know. Yeah. But, yeah, that's a.
It's a challenge.
That's a challenge with fruit trees.
And, yeah, depending on what kind of fruit it is, it's only certain things go for certain things. So.
Right.
Jeff Kendall, Horseman Brothers, Glenn Kramer, Robinson Seed Company with us here on the KMOX Garden Hotline, and we're taking your phone calls at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. We were speaking about how the kind of the growing season's kind of been delayed a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
And just that, does that slow your business down as well?
You know, Glenn and I were talking, and it is totally a different year than last year, or maybe even the year before, you know, like in landscaping, and I'm sure it affects Glenn a ton as well, with turf care and different things. You know, last couple of years, February was a working month. You know, we were actually out doing a lot of landscaping and cleanups and mulch and, you know, getting maybe an early jump on turf fertilization and weed control, that kind of thing. And this year, you know, February was a winter month, basically. And, you know, March had a few warm days, but it also had some rainy days and some very windy days, you know, so it just wasn't really productive. And we were saying that the soil temperatures actually way behind what it was in, you know, February and March and April of last year. You know, things are taking their time.
Grass seeds are slower to germinate. Weed controls are slower to control weeds. There's a lot of moving parts and expectations. When you have a abnormally warm spring like last year, people think that's going to happen every year in St. Louis. And the only thing constant about the weather in St. Louis is there's no consistency. And so, you know, 6 inches of rain last weekend, you know, when's the last time that's happened? You know, there's just so many variables that change things. Yeah. So, yeah.
Keeping the weather stats over here.
You got to be patient. We talked about that the last time we were on the show. You know, yeah, sometimes it's just hard because your expectation is where it is because of history, but then history doesn't repeat itself, and you just got to wait for the good things to happen. But they will happen, right, Jeff? Yeah, they because they always do.
Well, they will, and actually, you know, right now it's a little later than normal than it was last year. But you know, like right now, it's still a great time to, you know, get out there and plant, you know, especially your trees and shrubs and, you know, the woody type plants and even the perennials, I'm sure, are all right. I haven't snuck ahead too far, but it looks like the worm, as they say, is turning for warmer weather the next couple of weeks. But, you know, I'm certainly glad we haven't started planting annuals or something, because I would have taken a beating maybe last night. I don't know.
I drove by Weathops on Barrett Station Road yesterday, and the big sign, they're selling stuff like crazy, but the sign said it's too early to plant. So I think even they know that we'll sell it to you, but just – kind of keep it in the back, in the garage or in the back porch and covered until Mother Nature stops giving us, you know, 41 degree nights.
Right. I was going to say, Glenn, that's a great point, especially talking about the annual flowers, you know, that, there's more to it than just a frost. I mean, obviously a frost can outright, you know, kill them or damage them. But if you put them in too early and the nighttime lows, like Glenn was saying, are in the 40s and stuff, they just sit there, and it's bad. And if it gets too wet, then they tend to want to rot out in the ground and different things. So let's make sure the sun's shining and they're happy when they go in.
Taking your phone calls on the KMOX Garden Hotline at 314-436-7900. Is it too late to put some grass seed down?
It's not too late to put it down. You'll get it to grow, but I tell people, and we get to ask this question all the time. Your expectation has to be low, because so you're asking a cool season plant to go into the hottest time of the year. So it'll look good. You'll mow it, but if you don't have irrigation, or if you mow too short, you don't have a plan for success. A lot of it dies over the summer, because we don't know how hot it's going to be. We just know it's going to be hot, and we don't know how long, and we don't know how dry it's going to be. So this time of year, I tell people, if you plant grass seed, expect to redo it again in September, and you'll have a better success rate this time next year. So you can plant, but your expectations should really come down to, you know, maybe less than 50% of it being alive in September.
Patience. We were talking about patience before.
If it's on the shelf, send it our way.
And is it different types of grass seed at different parts of the year work better? Or is it just kind of, you can put them down now and then put them down in September?
Yeah, we're a big fescue and bluegrass promoter if you have irrigation on the bluegrass side. But ryegrass will germinate in 3 to 5 days. If you want something that'll pop quick and stabilize the soil, that's not a bad idea. But yeah, tall fescue for the 99% or 95% of the calls that people give us. We'll recommend turf-type tall fescue blends.
Sure. What about fine fescue?
Yeah, those are more for the shade, like creeping red and chewing's fescue, sheep's fescue. And those, they sound the same, but they just tolerate a whole lot more shade. And when I teach my class, I always say shade grasses will fail miserably in the sun, but sun mixes might do okay in the shade. So it comes back to mowing height, irrigation. There's a lot of variables, shade grasses, no matter what grass you plant, will not tolerate short mowings without irrigation. If you like it short, you better have some irrigation to back it up. But yeah, fine fescues are just very sensitive to the sun. And so, like I say, the tall fescues will do okay in the shade, but fine fescues won't thrive in the sun at all.
It's the KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900. Jeff Kendall from Horseman Brothers and Glenn Kramer from Robinson Seed Company. We'll have more of your phone calls coming up after the break. Back on the KMOX Garden Hotline, we're taking your phone calls at 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900. Jeff Kendall, Horseman Brothers, and Glenn Kramer from Robinson Seed Company back here this morning. We were talking a little bit earlier about grass and things, and I got another grass question, then we can move on. Not that kind of grass, Drew. I know he's laughing over there. Ooh, it's grass. Not that kind of grass. When you have competing grasses in two lawns that butt up against each other, and your neighbor, you know, he's got this type of grass and you've got this type of grass, and you're fighting each other, how do you make that line perfect down the middle where you can tell difference between 2 yards. How do you keep them separate? Like when you have stuff like that.
What happens is the strong survives. Perfect example. My neighbor had some Zoysia installed next to my property, and it was creeping into my yard. And I'm not exactly a Zoysia fan, but it was creeping towards a red maple. And as my maple grew, the Zoysia actually has receded back into my neighbor's yard because shade stopped Zoysia. So that's a perfect example where the type and the species survives based on the environmental conditions. And, you know, when you mix grass seeds, we sell a lot of bluegrass and fescue mixes like we were talking about, and we do that on purpose so that the strong will survive. So at least you have something green and stabilizing the soil and something to look at. And so to get it perfect, that's a scary word in the horticulture business. You know, a lot of people say, what's my perfect lawn with no weeds, no maintenance? And I will jokingly say, yeah, it's something called AstroTurf. Yeah, it'll be perfect year round.
And the ball bounces really high.
It really nice. So, perfection in grass is up to the interpretation of the homeowner. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to tie into what Stuart was saying, I'm doing what we do at Horstman Brothers. And, hey, we buy a lot of good products from Glenn, you know. But you'll see it in neighborhoods all the time. You can tell who's feeding their lawn, who's taking care of it. It might be, like Stuart was saying, night and day difference side by side. One's a thin, limey green and has lots of weeds. One's deep green and looks great, you know. And I've actually taken pictures of that before where it's like night and day with or without, you know, treatment, you know. Yeah. So anyway, makes a difference.
Yeah.
So fighting off the neighbor's grass, it can be tough because sometimes they have an over-dominant seed and you have, you know, like in my case, I have that that fine fescue I was mentioning earlier. I have that because I have a lot of trees in my front yard and it grows great, but their grass just keeps taking over at least a part of the yard. But I guess you're just going to – it's just kind of one of those things.
Yeah, well, you deal with it and you mow it high. I think that, to me, is probably the number one rule. We get infatuated with close-cut turf, and you can get away with it when it's cool like today. But come June and July, you know, your expectation should be to mow infrequent and high as you can. And if your grass lays down, it's not a sign of death. It's a sign of dormancy, especially on your fine fescue. So when they lay down, they're actually protecting the ground to try to keep it cool and have some root growth. So don't chase clippings with your lawnmower. That to me is the number one failure of cool season lawns in St. Louis. We think mowing it short will rejuvenate it when it'll just help to add to the detriment of the looks of the grass.
All righty. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have Sue with us on the line. Here on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Hey, Sue. I'll tell you what. I am moving from, I should say we, are moving from a house with a nice southern exposure in the back where I grow my beloved peonies. And we're moving to a house where it's east and west facing, and I don't really have space for it. I mean, there's a small, think ranch in South County. So there's a small strip of land on the south that, you know, it's between that house and the neighbor's house. I'm not sure they're going to work there. Is there any hope for peonies facing the west, or should I just have to give it up?
Hey, Sue, I think they'll do fine for you. I can actually, I'm familiar with this. I have inherited at the house I live in peonies, and they were, I'm sure, planted because they're great. They bloom.
Yes,
the deer don't eat them, which is where I live is a big deal. And they're on a west exposure, and they do great. And I really don't treat them like I should. You know, I mean, I don't do much to them, you know, and they're doing great.
Okay, well, the problem is, I didn't mention this, in the back there is some shade. There's a lot of trees. Should I just find the brightest spot and go for that?
You know, okay, so I can, like my own situation, there's a good size maple tree right off the deck, you know, and they do get sun, but I'm guessing even in the middle of summer, if they get 3 hours of intense sun a day, that's probably what they're getting, you know. I mean,
okay.
That's my best
okay.
guess, you know. And they, like I said, they do great, and I truly don't do much to them, you know. I cut them
okay
Big believer in cutting them back in September before they start to get dormant, you know, because then you can get some disease issues with them, the way I understand that. So cut them back.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for this. And I've got one more question. We had a maple come back a little bit last year, just a Japanese maple, but it didn't. It did not leaf out on all of the branches, just a few. And now it's come back, and same thing, just a few. Is that something that's not going to recover, and we should just take it out? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a couple problems with Japanese maples right now. But the main thing I would tell you is kind of what we were talking earlier about the differences in the wet winter weather. You know, Japanese maples are very vulnerable to what we have in St. Louis, where we get a mild stretch in February or March, and then we get a real bad cold snap, you know, later in the spring. And especially if you do that a couple years in a row, it just really does take a toll. There are some diseases, you know, the maple family can get some diseases, and some of them are, you know, frankly, they're not much you're going to do with them. They're vascular type diseases and things, and there's not a lot you can do with it, you know.
Okay. So it's not going to come back. It's not going to suddenly make a recovery.
I think what I would suggest is obviously wait until you're sure where the wood is dead, and then just snip off the dead wood. And I'd, especially early this spring before it gets hot, I'd give it some extra food, you know, and see if you can't push some new growth on it. It may recover.
Okay. Oh, thank you for the. Oh, I have one more. Am I hogging the Garden Hotline?
You're gonna Sue Thomas. You're gonna be hosting it next hour. Can you make it up here in time? Maybe you can give us a traffic update in between.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Okay, one more. I have hydrangea in the backyard, which I really like. It's southern and it gets a little too much sun, so I'm looking forward to planting a few in the eastern sun of this new house. Will that do okay? Do they like the east?
Yes, absolutely. You know, both the the endless summer type blooming, the blue or pink ones, you know, that they'll be fine on an east or paniculata type, the cone shaped blossoms should be fine as well.
Okay. You guys, thank you so much. This has been really helpful.
Good luck with the move,
Sue. Yep.
Thank you.
Sue Thomas, special co-host of the Garden Hotline this morning here on KMOX. Drew, do we have another phone call here? Okay, let's go to Mary. Good morning, Mary. You're on the program.
Good morning.
Morning, Mary.
I have a question about privacy evergreen. I'm thinking of the arborvitae, and I understand that there is a columnar type of that tree. Can you kind of tell me if you've had any luck with growing those? As they grow, would the top get kind of bushy? Now, mind you, I want this thing for privacy.
Okay, Mary, you know, if you have arborvitaes or you want to use arborvitaes for privacy, the amount of area you have is the key thing, you know, like, so green giant arborvitaes are beautiful. They really are.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous, but I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3, plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant. Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah. We can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay. Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Leewood, it's time to turn heads, drop jaws, and feel unstoppable. Beaumont Health and Wellness brings you award-winning weight loss, hormone therapy, and advanced beauty treatments like body contouring, microneedling, and injectables. Sign up for our weight loss shots and get your first week free. Plus, receive a free body composition analysis and a free B12 shot to fire up your metabolism. Beaumont Health and Wellness, luxuriously bold, effortlessly sexy, undeniably you. Spots are limited. Call 913-261-9855 or book now at Beaumont Health KS.
For the most part, they do great, but you need a lot of room to really let them grow. They get fairly large. If it's a like more of a privacy hedge, you might want to go with the emerald green arborvitae, although there are some issues with those. I mean, getting them established, it's critical that you do proper watering for them. They can dry out very easily, you know, so... First couple of years, you got to really make sure they get adequate water. But that makes a great privacy hedge, you know, for arborvitae. There's actually some that are more even narrow than that. But if you're looking for privacy, you wouldn't want them to stay individual. You know, I would think you would want them to grow together. So if you plant the emerald greens on a 3 to 4 foot spacing, they'll grow together in a reasonable time and make a nice hedge.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Mary, for that phone call. Appreciate it. KMOX Garden Hotline continues, 314-436-7900. If you'd like to be a part of the program, including other hosts, no problem. 314-436-7900. Do I hear music? Is there music in the background? Does that mean we need to take a break? Is that what that means? All right, we'll be right back after these messages on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Man, Drew, playing some good tunes this morning here on the Garden Hotline. The phone number to be a part of the program is 314-436-7900. We have Jeff Kendall from Horseman Brothers and Glenn Kramer, Robinson Seed Company as well. 314-436-7900. During the break, we were kind of talking about transitioning from grass to mulch and the do's and don'ts and some of the things you've all seen locally on, you know, what people are doing with their mulch and then the rain falling and pushing all the mulch away and they would replace it. Where do we start?
Well, I think what I see a lot of out there, and Jeff probably sees it too, is people mulching like a volcano or putting mulch up along, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches on the side of a bark of a tree. You know, the bark of a tree is part of the growing part of the tree. It protects the tree. It helps it in its life cycle. And if we put mulch against the bark of a tree and soften it, we're inviting insects and diseases that might not make it through that bark. So, you know, we talked about this before, but we like to say mulch like a bagel. So high on the edge.
It's a donut.
Or a donut, a bagel donut, yeah.
Whatever you're hungry for, savory
but
not or like sweet.
Not like a muffin or a volcano where you got a cone on the bark of a tree. I even see that in some of the municipalities driving around, and you think, if anybody should know better, it'd be them.
But, tisk, tisk.
Yeah.
We'll get them later.
We're all learning. I'm learning every day.
So. We're naming names in the next hour, okay? Speaking of naming names, let's go to Jerry, who's on the phone line on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. I've got a couple of questions about my zoysia lawn. The first one is, I had a big oak tree in the middle of it that got taken out in July of 2019. I dug out the chips, put some topsoil down, put some new zoysia in there, and it grew, and it's growing fine. The problem is I have a hole there now, and the hole is about 9 feet in diameter, and at the deepest point in the middle is probably about 5 inches deep. Now, my questions are, I would like to fill that hole up with dirt. Should I wait a little bit longer? This has been about 6 years. I don't know, you know, if I should wait a little bit longer before I do this. And also, if I put dirt on top of it, will the zoysia that's there right now, will that grow through it, or should I put new zoysia on top of it? Any help you could give me, I would really appreciate.
Zoysia is just waking up, Jerry, because of the soil temperatures. I don't think there's a bad time to put in the dirt. And will the zoysia grow through the new dirt? It will, but it won't be this month or next month. You probably won't see complete cover until late July even. And okay. So if you put in the soil, you know, you should probably do that and then look for some zoysia sod that would come available in first week of May, second week of May. It just depends on what Mother Nature does to us. But, would it grow through that in full sun? Sure, it'll be slow. In my opinion on zoysia, it creeps maybe 6 to maybe 5 inches in a year. But, just go ahead and do the soil, get the leveling so you're not scalping, and hope for the best. And if you want to speed that up, buy some zoysia sod in about a month from now and put it in there and keep it watered. And I think it'll take right off because you got a perfect environment for growing it with full sun.
Or you could spade out the existing zoysia. If it's really good zoysia, take the energy to, you know, peel it up and put in your soil and be sure you tamp it in properly so it doesn't sink right away as soon as you start watering it. And then, then you don't have to buy the zoysia, you know.
That's a good point. Okay.
Don't do that for about a month. Make sure that zoysia is out of total dormancy would be my opinion. Because right now, all the zoysia in my neighborhood is like 50, 60% green. It's not 100% out of dormancy yet.
No, I understand what you're saying there. I wasn't planning on doing it right away, but I'm trying to make a few plans and know what I got facing me during the summer because I'm a little bit older. I'm in my 70s, so it gets hot in the summer and I got to pace myself a little bit. So
the power of the checkbook, Jerry.
I understand.
Work smart, not harder.
I've got another question. I had talked to you earlier about dethatching and coriolating my lawn, and you gave me some good suggestions to do at the end of April. And you talk about putting a pre-emergent down. I've never put a pre-emergent down on my lawn. Is this like a granular thing? Do you buy these at big box stores or garden centers? Or can you give me any recommendations along that line?
Sure, you can. Yeah, you can buy them just about anywhere. Local hardware stores, knowledgeable folks there, box stores. When you do the power raking on zoysia, my opinion is you should wait about a week and water it so that the grooves that you've created are somewhat closed with with either some of the existing soil or you rake afterwards to make it smooth, but make sure you water the lawn and get it smooth before you apply your pre-emergent. And yeah, you can buy pre-emergents with fertilizer. You can buy pre-emergents that are just straight pre-emergents, but yeah, you would put that on about a week after that power raking would be my opinion, because you'll wake up a ton of weed seeds with that power raking, and that's the benefit of the power raking. And the side effect is growing some weeds that you might not have grown before.
Okay. Now, do you have to stay off the lawn after you apply that stuff? Does it disrupt the barrier or anything after you put that pre-emergent down?
No, you just put it on, and it won't get activated until you water it in. But
okay,
no, you'll be okay. You won't glow in the dark or anything like that. Just put it on, and you'll be fine. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate your help, guys.
Yeah. Good luck, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right. We're going to go to one more phone call, then we're going to take a break. Let's go to Gary, who's calling in this morning to the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, Gary.
The lady from Shaw's Nature Preserve, been on there in the past, she talked about George's mix grass seed.
Mm-hmm.
Where can you get that, and what's in it?
Well, it's there's four different types, and you can get it kind of all over town, but what area do you live in?
About 30 miles east of the river in Illinois.
We don't have any Illinois distributors, but probably the closest one would be Garden Heights Nursery at Big Bend and Highway 40, and they will have a sun mix, a mixture with fescue, and then they'll have a mixture with fescue and bluegrass, and then they'll have a shade mix also. So, you know, I will tell people that, you know, picking the best grass seed doesn't allow you to mow it short, not water it, or not fertilize it. It's like buying the best treadmill and just looking at it and wondering why you're not losing weight. So you have to do the cultural practices properly to get the benefits of the grass seed that you're buying. So we pride ourselves on selling good seed, but we also deal with vendors who have good knowledge that'll help you with the proper steps to get the benefits of the seed you're buying.
Okay, you mind repeating that store again?
Garden Heights Nursery on Big Bend in Richmond Heights.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you much.
They're great people there. You'll like them.
And the seed, what's that seed called?
George's Magic Mix is the
George's
trade
Magic
name, and then
Mix.
there's four mixes underneath that title.
Okay.
Glenn's company is the distributor for that.
I got you.
So okay. Glenn's selling to Garden Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see. I can see it working live on radio. Hey, we need to take a break.
He's sharp today.
Caffeinated.
Perfect time to take a break and talk about it during the break. KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900. We're taking your phone calls right after this. Did you play that because of the Georgia Magic blend? So smart. You're so smart. KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900. Going back to the phones right before we hit the news, let's go to Joy, who's been hanging out for us. Joy, you're on the program. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have an evergreen that we just planted a couple of years ago. I believe it's called that. It begins AR. I think you just said it before. Arborvitae.
Like
yes. Anyway, the deer got a hold of it this winter. Just annihilated in the center. So now that the spring has come, where they annihilated it so bad, there was a lot of brown limbs hanging there. So we cut those off. Do you think that we should take the whole tree out, or do you think that it will come back?
You know, as long as there's some, you know, live tissue green, you know, left on the branches, eventually, you know, it may fill in, especially if you do some pruning on the rest of it to kind of give it time to, you know, proportionately fill back in. If it's down to the trunk, there's not much hope for it.
Yeah. It's still on the smorgasbord for that deer, right?
They did a pretty good job on it.
Yeah.
And we don't see any new growth at this point.
Yeah, the deer were, you know, very, very aggressive this winter. You know, we had a longer, you know, colder, you know, type winter. And I've seen deer damage on even junipers this spring. And, you know, normally they won't touch junipers, you know. So
right.
they were very, very hungry this winter.
It's all about supply and demand, right? The more deer, the more they'll eat stuff that they normally don't eat.
Well, the one thing you might do with that, though, and is, like I said, if it still has green on the twigs, go ahead and give it some fertilizer as well this spring, and you know, see if you can't push a little new growth, and then, like I said, maybe do a little shearing on the rest of the plant, and trying to even it out a little bit. It's about all you can do, really.
It's had plenty of water, okay. That's for sure.
Okay.
Thanks.
If we would take it out, though, are we able to plant something in its place right away, or do we need to wait?
No, I mean, an arborvitae like that, you probably should be able to remove the actual root ball, you know, and basically you dig out the existing one, and you'll have a nice hole to put the new one in. You know, should be pretty
okay,
straight.
Okay, very good.
All right, thanks.
Good luck, Joy.
Thank you.
All right, well, yeah, the aggressive deer. Been really aggressive this year. Drew, do we have enough time to take this next call, or should we hold him over? Okay, let's go to Peggy real quickly, Peggy. You got about a minute, so what you got?
I've got a burning bush existing hedge that's quite old. Some of them are starting to fade, and I was wondering if you could, just like the previous caller, an evergreen for privacy that you could replace that are deer-resistant. Green Giant's going to be way too big for where I need it.
Yeah, Peggy, you know, with that evergreen and deer resistant, you know, like I said, the juniper family would be the first thing that pops into my mind, or a spruce of some kind, you know. There is a fastigiated or columnar type spruce. It would be an expensive way to go, but it's, you know, Picea abies suppressiana, and you can plant those fairly close together, and the deer should leave those alone. So far, I think they've left them alone.
That could be a challenge.
It'll be challenging, but it's not a challenge to turn up your radio, because we've got another KMOX Garden Hotline coming up next hour with Jeff Kendall, Horseman Brothers, and Glenn Kramer from Robinson Seed Company. It's all next on KMOX CBS News at the top of the hour. Or fade it down, whatever. Welcome back to the KMOX Garden Hotline. Stuart McMillan here, 314-436-7900. There it is. That's the song I want. KMOX Garden Hotline. You could be part of the program, just like so many others did in the last hour. Jeff Kendall is still here from Horseman Brothers, and Glenn Kramer as well, Robinson Seed Company. And we've had it's been like just back and forth on all kinds of different discussions today. Mostly it seems like people are focused on their lawns, as far as the grass is concerned. Do we have another call? Let's see if I can mix this up here. All right, we have Tim on the line. Do I say that? No, yeah. Okay. We have Tim on the line. Good morning. You're on KMOX. Yes,
good morning. Thank you. Real quick question. Is it healthier for the lawn to bag your grass or to let it just fall?
There's two sides to that story. It's kind of what you believe. I'm of the belief that no one's going to walk by your lawn in July and say, oh, you're the guy in the neighborhood that doesn't bag his clippings. And just like they're not going to walk by your yard and say, you're the guy that bags his clippings. It's really personal choice. From what I know and what I think people that have told me in the industry that I respect tell me that the grass clippings are mostly 95, 96% water. And some people will say there's a lot of nutrients in there, and there may be nutrients in there, but again, not enough nutrients to move the needle. So it becomes right. Personal choice, and I will say that if you leave too many clippings, that will hurt the lawn. If you have so many clippings that it turns the grass yellow underneath, that's not helping anything. So
right.
You have to apply some common sense to leaving the clippings, and too many clippings is just too many clippings, and you have right. to know where that is.
I usually bag it, and I like the all-around look, but I notice all, you know, these companies that do it for, you know, with these big mowers, they never bag anything. I guess that would take too much time, and they cut it once a week also, so you can't even tell.
It's got to be practical.
Yeah, and like Glenn preaches all day long, if you mow it regularly and at the right height, your clippings really shouldn't be that that tall. So that would be the really the, I guess, the issue there. And certainly if it gets a little on the tall side, like Glenn was saying, and you're going to leave the lawn covered or something, well, then you got to either, you know, sure, you can bag it or blow it into piles and rake it up or whatever works. But, yeah, you can't leave it coated, you know, where it's blocking out the light and everything.
Right.
Try to only remove one third of the leaf blade. That's the rule in the industry.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. We heard what's going on in Tim's yard. Let's see what's happening in Curtis's yard this morning on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, Curtis.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have to say that I haven't had a chance to listen in a while because of my work schedule. So first off, I saw listening when Mike was hosting the show. How is he doing?
That is a great question.
From what we know, what little I know about him is he isn't in the best of health, but I know he's trying as hard as he can, and he's a great steward of the industry, and that's what I will always remember him as. But he's not in the best of health right now, unfortunately.
Well,
I
will keep him in my prayers, Dan, because yes, he is the reason I'm calling now, because I am just so eager to get my garden started. But I'm just not sure with these temperatures and the soil temperatures, because I'm thinking I wanted to go and get my greens in the ground, you know, my broccolis, cauliflower, my mustard, turnips, cabbage, that kind of thing in the ground from seed. And I'm wondering, is it okay to go ahead and start putting those seeds in the ground now, or do I need to wait for it to get a little bit warmer so the ground is a little bit warmer?
Well, I'm not an expert on those, but I will tell you, I think based on what I do know and what you are growing there, I think you're in the wheelhouse to get going on it, because they're typically planted early season. So we're already in April, you know, and halfway done with April. So I would think you're all right. We were just looking at the extended forecast for the next 2 weeks, and there's still some lower temperatures in a few of the evenings, but in general, I think the soil is going to start warming up here in the next 2 weeks.
I hold off on tomatoes for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I agree about tomatoes. I do know that.
More sensitive. Yeah.
Yeah, they like it warm.
Well, good stuff. I appreciate the information. I'm going to put my phone on speaker and get out of the yard and start some stuff. You all have a great day and a wonderful rest of your weekend.
Good luck, Curtis.
All right. Thanks, Curtis, for the phone call. You could be next on the KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900. Call if you have a question for Jeff Kendall from Horseman Brothers or Glenn Kramer from Robinson Seed Company. And we've had a lot of people focusing on the lawns, but that was kind of the first garden question I've heard as far as putting broccoli in the ground and things like that. But that cold weather is kind of getting people apprehensive a little bit about planting.
Yeah, no, it's like we were saying earlier, it's, Glenn was, I think, spot on when he was saying we're at least 2 weeks, you know, behind where we were this time last year. So, I think Glenn said he saw a sign from a greenhouse grower, you know, that said buy the flowers, but it's too early to plant, you know. So, I do think it looks like things are going in the
right direction.
You know, we'll get caught up. And actually we need, it's beautiful, like with this cooler weather and a blue sky. You know, we need a couple nice non-windy spring days would be good.
Get going, yeah. You bet.
Well, what topic should we kick around now, gentlemen? We were talking about mulching earlier. Did we kind of flush that out as much as we could?
I think we got going on that, and Glenn's point about the volcanoes on the trees is, boy, that's very important. I mean, that's a good way to ruin trees. The other thing is mulch depth, you know, and why do we mulch to begin with? You know, we're looking to hopefully have it, of course, look nice, but we want to, you know, reduce weeds and retain moisture for the most part and insulate the ground so the temperatures, like we're talking about, are more regulated a little bit. So think about 2 to 3 inches at the most, you know, inches of especially with the bark type mulch that most people are putting down. And, yes, I'm an advocate of a good quality all bark, you know, bark type mulch if you can get that. Not just wood chips, really, you know.
And if you applied a pre-emergent and we had a heavy range and you had to redo the mulch, restir it, you have to reapply your pre-emergent too, because that pre-emergent would have been broken either by the rain and or your stirring of that. So
So like we were saying, that the 6 inches of rain last, that can do some all kinds of things. It can wash away seed if you planted seed, or it could even wash away some of the mulch. I've seen a lot of that, especially around bed edges, you know, where the edge of the bed just becomes the easiest point of least resistance for the water to flow down out of the bed, and it washes away from the edges there.
So. Now, the news story about the fencing around the grass, you know, grass is an amazing plant. It'll revive itself just by not having traffic on it. If all the city did was mow that grass behind those fences for 2 years, it'll wake up all on its own. It's a wonderful plant, but heavy traffic and short mowings and no irrigation. I get calls a lot of people with dogs. You know, what do I do? I got two dogs. I'm like, man, you got AstroTurf in your future or a mulch bed, because traffic and grass doesn't hold up well, you know, unless you have the budget of you know, the Cardinals and the Chiefs and people like that who do that for a living.
Right.
So it's
different. Or people that like to have a green in their backyard.
Sure.
Do a little putting, a little chipping, a little,
And I'll tell you, the artificial part of those has really taken off. You see a lot more advertisements for that. And some people would have those in their backyard. I've been to a couple of houses on a consulting job, and they're really cool looking.
So, not to put you on the spot or anything, but this park out here that we were just talking about, the park restoration.
Yeah.
So is that restoration process just mowing it?
No. Well, I don't know the details, but I do know, grass will revive itself if it's not heavily trafficked. And tents and people laying on it and cardboard isn't a formula for success for growing grass. So just eliminating that, and, you know, and...
Well, but if it was down to bare dirt, Glenn.
Right. I don't know what it was like before the tents showed up. Yeah,
I don't know if they seeded it or not. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know all the particulars, but like I say, in the end, if you let grass with no traffic, it's amazing how it can rebound.
Let's sunshine some receipts. So let's see if we can get some receipts if they put any grass seed down. Let's go back to the phones before I get in real big trouble. Let's go to Paul. Who's calling in on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, Paul.
Morning. Yeah, I had a question. I have a arborvitae tree. I'm not sure what the type is. And it's got a few limbs, maybe 4 or 5 foot long. The arborvitae is probably 15, 20 feet long. But these limbs just, 3 or 4 of them just died. And now I'm getting a little bit of browning on the green. And then I have a smaller one next to it. It seems like it's getting that, too. I don't know if it's a bug or something wrong with the roots or something, but I can't believe how fast the limbs died. And I don't believe it's from any snow load, no broken. You know, I've looked at it. I can't figure out what it is. You know, if you had any ideas.
Paul, there are a couple diseases that arborvitae can get. Sometimes they're hard to, and it may be this what you're describing, because usually what happens, they become infected over the fall, you know, and then they don't show the brown until the following spring, you know. That could be the problem. As you mentioned earlier, my first thought was maybe it had some kind of mechanical damage, like, you know, broken branches or something like that, you know, but... I admit, arborvitae's, I see it a lot. You know, you can have 10 in a row, and then all of a sudden, just one just suddenly dies. You know, it's just like random death.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, why sometimes that happens.
Yeah. It just seems like it was so quick that two or three branches just totally dead. I'm thinking something must have got to the root or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
You know, we've had some bad storms and wind. You may want to take a close look and make sure it's not broken in there somewhere. I would actually tell you also, I mean, what can you do? I mean, trim out the brown and the dead, and, you know, then maybe, like we've been saying, give it some fertilizer while it's still nice and cool, and see if you can't push out some good new growth.
Okay. All right.
And by the way, you know, right now we're not dry. We had 6 inches of rain, like, you know, but don't let those get dry in the middle of summer. That they do not like that.
That wouldn't be caused from over fertilizing, would it?
I don't think so. I really don't. I can't say I've ever seen that or read anything about that.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Good luck, Paul.
Thanks.
We go to Paul, from Paul to Larry here on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Larry.
I have two questions for you. First of all, I'm calling from Springfield, Illinois. One question, is this the right time to start trimming boxwoods?
You can go ahead and shear the boxwoods. I typically recommend doing them in May and September, you know, are really the two best months. But you know, if you want to give it a light trim now, if you think it's just too big, it should set new buds and, you know, grow flush back out. And you'll probably still be trimming it in September. You know,
Okay.
All right. It's going to be May. It's going to be May in a couple of weeks, right? So we're getting there.
Okay. My second question. For whatever reason, I have a miniature lilac tree.
Okay.
I've had it for around 10 to 12 years. After it blooms every year, I prune it. I've been doing it for that amount of time. For some reason, I've got basically about a third of it that's not showing any blooms at all. Nothing. I think that part of it is dead for some reason.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it missing more than just the bloom? I mean, is it not have any leaves coming out either? Or?
Right, no leaves at all.
What you want to do is take your thumbnail or, you know, scrape the bark on those and see if they're green underneath. If they're, you know, if they're brown and, you know, then yeah, you're going to have to just prune it off. Not sure what happened. Yeah,
that's what I was worried about because I've done a little bit of that. You know, I pulled back a couple of the little branches, and I don't see any green.
Yeah,
so I just said no.
It's probably, you know, hard to say what really happened there. I mean, the lilac itself is not a cold sensitive plant. You know, I mean, it can live in pretty cold conditions. Now, is this? You said it's like a tree. Is it on a standard? You know, a stem, and then a head comes off the single trunk, or what is it?
Yeah, the head, the trunk's probably around, I would say, 2 feet tall, 2.5 feet tall.
Okay.
Something like that.
And then it's like a little ball on top of the trunk. Is that right? Or is it a, you know, branching from the bottom or from a trunk?
From a trunk.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have seen that where, you know, like those don't last. Seem like forever. They really don't. I don't know. It could even be that over time something's changed with the way that was grafted onto the trunk, you know, would be a thought that just, you know, something's changed or something didn't work.
Well, all right. I'll go ahead and trim it.
Really all you can do is trim it. And yeah, like we were saying, feed it, you know, see what happens, you know, maybe it helps revive it.
Okay. Yeah. All right, guys.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling from Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah.
That's nice. Okay. We've got more of your phone calls coming up. You can call 314-436-7900. This is the KMOX Garden Hotline.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden.
Welcome back to the KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. We have Debbie on the line. She's going to be speaking with Jeff Kendall of Horseman Brothers and Glenn Kramer, Robinson Seed Company. Good morning, Debbie. You're on the program.
Good morning.
Hi, Debbie.
Thanks for having me. I got a quick question. I got a lot of zinnia seeds I was going to plant, and yet I know to read the back of the instructions, but I was just wondering, with the fluctuating weather, do you feel like it's a good time to throw those guys in the ground now, or should I wait?
I think I'd go ahead and do the seeds, you know. I mean, if they were already, you know, up and you bought them, I might be a little hesitant, you know. But I think the seeds will wake up when the soil starts to warm up, and I think you'd be all right.
Mm, I agree.
All right. Well, that's the answer I wanted. Thank you. But my other quick question is, so I can find companies to help me get rid of that invasive honeysuckle bush, but the invasive honeysuckle, and I'm sorry, I don't know the botanical names. I have a hard time finding a company that helps remove that. Do you guys know anybody that does, or can you recommend anybody for that?
Okay, you kind of cut out there for a minute, but, you know,
Sorry.
Well, like, but yeah, removing honeysuckle, you know, our company, Horseman Brothers, we can do that for you. You know, that's, you know, there's different ways to do it. You can dig it out or you can cut it off and treat the stump. There's yeah. different, you know, ways to go about removing that.
Well, may I ask, do you guys also remove the vines? Because the shrubs are, well, they're their own problem, but I also have the vines.
Yes.
Honeysuckle.
Yeah. So.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah. No. Any. Like you're saying, any kind of invasive type vine that's choking out a plant. What we got to do is cut it off and pull as much as we can, you know, out of the plant or out, you know, the tree or off the tree. You're may not get it all, but anyway, you cut it down by the ground and pull what you can, clean it off, and then go ahead and treat the stump of the vine is yes. really the way to go.
Sometimes a second visit's needed, isn't it?
Yeah.
A couple months later, so you miss something, and
yeah, right.
It's rare to get that all in one shot.
I totally hear that. All right. Well, that's been very helpful, gentlemen. Thank you very much, and well wishes to Mike Miller.
Amen. Thanks. Good luck, Debbie.
Okay, and Horseman Brothers, I guess we can give you a call at some point. Do you have that number handy somewhere?
Sure, 314-432-0880. Thanks, Stuart.
No problem.
Yeah.
we'll go to more of your phone calls, and we'll have Robinson Seed Company. We'll have their number in a little bit, too. Brian, you're on the program, KMOX Garden Hotline. Thanks for hanging out for us and waiting so patiently. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Love this conversation.
Thank you.
So I got a question. Last year, my wife and I mixed up our hanging basket configurations. We'd never done ferns before. And I saw one at Lowe's that was absolutely beautiful and huge. It was, at the time I bought it, it was probably about a 3-foot total diameter out of a standard hanging basket. And I thought, hey, I'm just getting a great value for such a big fern for the same price as a smaller fern. So I bought it. And we hung it, and that thing turned massive last year. It was beautiful. We had people stop and ask us what we were doing to get such a massive, beautiful fern. And it was probably at its peak about 4 feet in diameter out of this standard pot and hanging probably equally 4 feet to the ground. But anyway, we did nothing but water it and put it in partial shade. So I wanted to, you know, keep this thing for this year. So read up on how to store them over the winter. So we cropped it back, hung it in the basement next to a window where it had access to light throughout the day when the sun was on that side of the house. And it went dormant. It's brown, and we've taken it back outside now. It's got a little bit of greenery on it, but not much. So my question to you is, without any evidence on Google of a real answer, is this thing going to come back this year, you think?
I mean, the fact that it has green on it now is a good sign, you know. I don't know that it's mainly – I don't know that it's going to get 4 foot. I don't know. I was also going to tell you, you know, I've been recommending feeding things, and you know, I think some food would be good here, but I do know ferns in general are not a real high, high nitrogen demanding plant. So you don't need to overfeed it. I think it just needs to wake up.
Mm. Yeah, a couple weeks. Yep.
And that was going to be my next question. Do I need to feed it? Because we did absolutely.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Train to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Train to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely nothing but water it last year, and if I need to feed it a little bit, what, I mean, can you give me some idea of how much I feed it and what nutrients I feed it?
Oh, I think maybe I'd just do something simple like a Miracle-Gro kind of thing and just maybe do it now and then maybe again in a couple weeks and then maybe see what it does and then leave, you know, don't continually do it because I think I'm right that they don't need high fertility all season long.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing it as beautiful and massive as it was last year again this year. So yeah. I appreciate your advice and your help.
Good luck, Brian.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we went from Brian. Let's go to Frank, who's on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, Frank, and welcome to the program.
Good morning to you. I really don't have a question, but you probably know this, but to me it's a little bit of trivia. The old K31 coarse fescue, it was obviously a clump grower and not good for lawns, but that was developed during World War II for the Air Force or the planes taking off were getting so much dust from the runways that was clogging the engines. And they went down, and I guess they talked to, you know, the scientists that could develop something for them. And they came up with this K31. Hmm. Now, back in the day, people were using it for lawns. I mean, it's sprout resistant, and you can drive over it. It doesn't seem to hurt it. So it was just something that popped into my mind, just a piece of trivia.
You know, that's interesting, Frank. I think K31 gets a bad rap. Mm-hmm. And if you have a non-irrigated, hard soil lawn and you can mow it at 4 inches, K31, in my opinion, if it's planted tightly, you know, maybe at a higher seed rate of like 10 to 12 pounds per thousand square feet versus 8 to 10 of turf type tall fescues, you'd be surprised that clumpiness comes out when it gets thin and the individual plants are allowed to get clumpy. But when it's planted tightly, you don't really see the virtues of that clumpiness from the K31. And I'll tell you, I recommend it more and more to unirrigated, lousy soil, trafficked it with dogs. The key to K31, in my opinion, mow it high, you know, 4, 4.5 inches. And that might drive some folks crazy, but you could actually have a nice lawn with K31 with the right cultural practices. But thanks for the history lesson. That is interesting. I had no idea about that. I know Missouri grows more K31 than any other state in the country, or at least they did, you know, a few years ago. So.
You never hear much about it being talked about, but back in the day, I was in the business, and I would occasionally come across a lawn that was planted, like you say, tightly, and cut. And, I mean, it was beautiful, you know.
Back in the 90s, I sold K-31 to Forest Park Community College. There was a guy that ran the grounds there named Mike Twombly, and he believed in K-31 and the virtues of having inexpensive grass planted at a higher seed rate. And that campus looked great for years, you know. And it, I said, it's underrated grass, and it gets a lot of trouble. We sell a lot of it to our contractors who want something just tough and durable, and usually under less than favorable conditions. And it performs or it doesn't, depending on.
It's not really cheap anymore either.
No, it's not. For a while there, K-31 was more expensive than turf-type tall fescues, but it has come down in price considerably,
right,
as have some tall fescues have come down in price also.
Lighter green color, you have to kind of tolerate, you know. But again, if it's homogenous or, you know, a thick stand of it, you know, it looks –
Yeah, we got the Masters on over our shoulder here in the studio, and there's no K-31 at Augusta National.
No K-31 there. Back on the KMOX Garden Hotline, Jeff Kendall, Horseman Brothers, and Glenn Kramer from Robinson Seed Company. Glenn, I promised we could tell people about Robinson Seed Company real quick. Why don't we do that in case I forget near the end of the program?
Yeah, thanks, Stuart. Yeah, we've been in business 25 years, and I'm on my way out, and my son Ben's on his way in, and we're just an independent wholesale distributor of grass seed and fertilizer. And, you know, we teach classes at Merrimack and at the Botanical Gardens, and we just pride ourselves on being local guys that help people grow grass in the St. Louis area. I got a consulting today at 1:30, and looking forward to just getting the truth out about how to grow grass in the Midwest.
There you go. The truth.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like that should be in the lead of the program, the truth about grass seed, St. Louis. What's a good phone number for?
We're at 314-432-0300.
All right, let's go to Ray. He's been very patient. Thanks, Ray, for hanging on with us here on the KMOX Garden Hotline.
Good morning. How do and when do I cut back a 7-foot crepe myrtle, and do I cut off last year's blooms?
Okay, Ray. First of all, you need to be a little patient with that crepe myrtle. I mean, unless you're ready just to bite the, you know, if you want it reduced, you know, if you could do it now, you know, I mean, just if you want to take that crepe myrtle and cut it almost halfway back, it'd probably be all right. But what we really need to find out with the crepe myrtle is where are they, how far down are they green, or how far up from the ground are they green? Because normally they'll die back some during the winter, and I'm sure if it's 7 foot tall, I doubt that it's leafs out at the very tips, but it maybe it would, I don't know, but you want to be patient, because they're not going to leaf out until probably the first part of May. I mean, they're at least a couple weeks away from leafing out.
Okay. Yeah. So far they're not green at all.
Yeah.
And I know they run late.
Yeah. So what you could do, same thing, is take your thumbnail and just start scraping the bark a little bit and seeing where it's green, you know? And
all right.
Do you need to reduce it? Is 7 foot too big, or is it?
No, it's fine.
Yeah. So I think I'd just be patient then. I'd just wait and see where it leaps out. And if it's, if the top 2 feet is dead, and cut the top 2 feet off, you know, is what I would probably suggest.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank
you. Good luck, Ray.
Okay. We go from Ray to Bill on the KMOX Garden Hotline. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
I have 7 acres. It's mostly recreational land. We hunt and fish on it, and sometimes just gather for large family things. But I was going to plant a couple wild American plum trees, and I wanted to know what, if anything, you knew about them and planting them.
Wild American plum trees. Interesting.
Yeah. That's wild. So, now there's a native plums, you know, and you know, those are popular. You know, I mean, that's good. I don't think there's really much trick to growing them. It's in the wild, it's usually on the perimeter of a wooded area, not deep in the woods. So I know it needs light, you know. Like most things, it's probably well drained is good. I wouldn't put it in a swampy area.
Deer will like those too, won't they?
You know, I think they – they're, as far as I know, they're not considered deer resistant. Yeah.
Persimmon. Yeah.
But yeah. So, I mean, it's a good, you know, it's a native tree.
Yeah.
It's good.
So that's one reason we picked it. Also, my wife really likes the pictures of the blooms in the spring. But yeah, hopefully the deer leave it long enough that they can eat the plums.
Yeah, you might have to put a cage around it for the first couple of years.
Yeah, we have an autumn blaze, I believe it's called
maple.
Maple, yeah. And what do you feel about tree spikes for fertilizing those or other kinds of fertilization? It's grown, we've had it 4 years, it's about 20 to 25 feet tall, but it isn't spreading out very much.
Well, I mean, part of that might just be the tree, you know, the shape of the tree and what it's doing. I'm trying to really, that cultivar, I'm not sure, you know, if that's predictable for that cultivar that it stays maybe a little more on the narrow side, it might. It's been around a long time, the autumn blaze. Anyway, as far as spikes, you know, hey, I'm sure they'll help, and they're better than no fertilizer at all. You know, I know, like in our industry or our company, we prefer doing liquid root feeding of trees. You know, but you know, spikes will be there, and they'll take a while to dissolve. So you know, they'll be in the ground for a while once you get them in there.
Yeah, the ground should be soft enough after that rain. That's for sure. Right.
Yeah. Any certain mix you would recommend?
Say again, Bill. We had tough hearing you there.
Any certain nutrition mix for the spikes that you would recommend, or just a general tree spike?
Yeah, you can go to a good garden center, and they'll have some recommendations. I've seen those at places like Schnars and places like that, and they have three or four to choose from, and just read the directions, and it'll match up to the type of tree you have, and should be pretty self-explanatory once you read the directions. The label on fertilizers or any chemical is the key to success of getting the right thing for in the right amount in particular. So it'll depend on the DBH or the diameter at breast height of that tree will dictate how many spikes you buy and the spacing around the drip line of the tree.
I think Bill's taking notes. Go. All right, yeah. Bill. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you. Okay.
Good luck, Bill.
All right. Well, we need to take a break. We'll have just one more segment to go. So if you haven't called and you've been kind of, you know, on the fence, call us now. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. You can be a part of the KMOX Garden Hotline. Final segment of the KMOX Garden Hotline here on KMOX. Jeff Kendall from Horseman Brothers and Glenn Kramer from Robinson Seed Company. We do have Jim on the line. Good morning, Jim. What do you have for us?
Hey, good morning. How can I get rid of green moss in my yard?
There's a couple of ways. One, Jim, it doesn't have any root system. You can mechanically scratch it with a leaf rake, and it'll come right up. The reason you have it, 9 times out of 10, in my experience, is it loves shade and it loves a lot of water. So sometimes you're getting water either from your downspouts or your neighbor's downspouts. But if you were to mechanically remove that and you were able to aerate and seed the lawn so that you have competition from the moss, but then address any water problems that you might have, do you know of it to be a wet area, Jim?
Yes, I had it on my retaining wall, and I bought some stuff from Home Lowe's, and I sprayed it with it, and it seems like that took care of that.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to spray it on the ground, but yeah, like you say, it's pretty well in the shaded areas, mm-hmm. and I've tried, you know, raking it and trying to work a little grass seed in the ground, but not a whole lot of success with that, but I'll tell you what, I'll give it a try again, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it loves the wet, compacted conditions, and if you can change that in any way, I think you'll have success with at least less moss anyway.
All right, okay. Well, thank you for that call. We go on to Eric. Good morning. You're on the KMOX Garden Hotline now.
Good morning. When do you know a boxwood or a series of boxwoods are potentially at the end of their life? I kind of have a set in a hedge formation in front of my porch, and they've really been thinning out and turning yellow, you know, in portions of it throughout the years.
Okay, Eric, you know, there could be a couple things going on there. I mean, boxwood actually in general can be a very long lived plant, you know. Now, the thinning out in yellow, there's an insect problem called leaf miner, and you can look at the leaves. You can actually see where it looks like maybe little bugs have mined through the leaf, you know, and you'll see like little vein-looking trails through the leaves, and that's an easy problem to deal with. Okay, this year there could be some winter damage depending on the variety of the boxwood. You know, certain ones aren't quite as cold hardy. It could be that could be to blame. There's also what's called boxwood blight, which is it's a bad fungal disease, and if it's already showing signs of it, it's very, there's very little you can do, you know, do for it. If you read about it, there's some fungicide applications that can be made, you know, but once it has it, I think it's kind of like you're in a uphill battle, you know, so you may want to get a professional, you know, to take a look at it and see what they
can always dig them up and plant K31.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Thanks, guys. KMOX Garden Hotline here on KMOX, CBS News and local news coming up at the top of the hour.